about the last few parshas that we've had, the Shemotim parshas, the first half a dozen in Shemos, recurring theme across them that might not be as evident initially, but it's something I have to think about a whole bunch. And that is the importance of preparation. The importance of being able to have some event that's going to be happening that is the thing that gets the limelight, but then the criticality of being able to build towards it, being able to build your foundation, being able to have the way in which you're going to be prepared for what that eventuality is. So just to give you a couple of examples, I'm sure we can go around and hear a lot more of them. But when we take a look first pasuk, the first half of the first pasuk, of Parshas Mishal, B'nai Israel are coming out of Mitzrayim. Pharaoh sent them out. What would be the logical thing? To take them the long path out of the way of the Moronic Mitzrayim behind them? Or to take the short path? The thing would be, the short path would be the way that you would be taking. However, Hashem, in that pasuk, tells us distinctly that he did not take us, Derech Eretz Mitzrayim, specifically because it was a short path. Why is that? One of the key things to think about is when Bnei Israel had rushed into conquering a nation, building Eretz Yisrael, would that be a recipe for success? To be able to take their mindset of Optus and be able to go into Kibush Haaretz as the actions are taking and the mindsets are being for it. Hashem needed to have the tutelage of them in the Midbar, to be able to prepare them and set the table for being able to conquer the land and being able to build it. Another example from the next parsha. Yes, there's the Dibros, get all the press. I don't know if anyone looked, we have a couple of Balfouris that you see here. How many psukim are the Aseret HaDibros? There are 13 psukim in the Aseret HaDibros. The part before that, when Bnei Israel get to Har Sinai, and they're preparing for getting the Aseret HaDibros, has 26 psukim, twice as many psukim. The preparation had to be done right for them to be able to have Matan Torah be successful. You think about what is 26 also. 26 is Shem Hashem. Hashem is putting Yud Kei Vav Kei on preparation. Preparation is holy as the way in which you're building your foundation, as the way in which you're preparing for the eventuality of what you're going to need to be doing. If you think about that, that is the mission here of YU. You are here for however many years, preparing for the next decades of life. And how we can put in place for you all the things that are needed for you to be fully prepared for it, to be able to unleash you, to be able to have the impact on the world, is necessary for you to do your preparation well while you are here. Specifically, within Psych Sims, we talk about being able to develop Torah-grounded professionals who are going to be able to succeed and excel, both in the workplace and in the community. If you think about coming out of high school, would you have been able to say, I could accomplish that mission? Torah-grounded, excelling in the workplace, excelling in the community? What we want is at graduation, when we ask you, have you been able to build your foundation to excel at being able to fill that mission? That we want to see of hands at that point. That's something now that Psy Sims has been doing for double high, for 36 years. Being able to prepare for the excelling and doing it in a Torah-grounded way. And so as you might have noticed at the Sarm sale, a variety of other things, we're celebrating right now the 36th anniversary of the double high. We have a theme a month that we are going to be celebrating. This month, partnering with the Sfarim sale, is our Jewish Values Curriculum. What is the Jewish Values Curriculum key to do? To develop Torah-grounded professionals who are going to excel in the workplace and community. Right up the alley of our mission that we have now been accomplishing for 36 years. And so thank you for being able to participate in it. This is just the first of the monthly things that we're going to be doing in terms of themes, in terms of activities. Next month, Entrepreneurship and Innovation. Month after that, honors program. Month after, et cetera. You have on your seats the cards that lay out for you the monthly activities that are going to, the monthly themes, and they're going to have each of them activities. And so find the ones that will help you build your foundation. Find the ones that will enable you to be able to be even more prepared for being able to go out, have your impact on the world, and be able to do it because you've invested in the time here in building that foundation. And so with that, I'm just going to lead into thanking also our panelists, with all the things that they're going to be imparting to them, to us here. We know that at least one of them torpedoed a trip to Eretz Yisrael, and another one came back early from Eretz Yisrael. This is their dedication to helping you build your foundation. And so thank you to them for the impact that they have on the cloud. Thank you also to Professor Wasserman for being able to help build four parts of the Jewish values curriculum, two courses within it, Pragma Workplace Alumna, where he taps Izzy William to be able to help prepare the students throughout this semester for it, and also the Designing the Jewish Life course that people just finished a few hours ago today, the next round of it. And so thank you for all you do, but very much looking forward to being able to broaden our foundation, being able to deepen our preparation with everything that you're about to cover now.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome everyone. Thank you, Dean Wasserman. My brother Noam. So I'm spearheading the values courses and this event tonight. I do want to say to all the students as I start the class, the Practical Workplace Halacha, you are the future leaders of Klal Yisrael. And my hope is that we, or the panelists, can impart some nuggets of wisdom that will assist you on that path. And always remember, you are the future leaders of Klal Yisrael, and that is the responsibility and an opportunity. I want to start out with my favorite, one of my most favorite Divrei Torah that I heard as a child. I don't remember who said it, but it stuck with me. And it goes as follows. We have Moshe Rabbeinu at the beginning of Sefer Shmos coming out, and we know that he grew up as a prince in the palace of Paro, but he also knew, obviously, that he was Jewish. And he comes out one day, and he sees an event that there's a Mitzri, an Egyptian, beating a Jew. And the Pasuk tells us, Vayifen ko v'cho v'yarki eini, she looked this way, he looked that way, he was making sure that the coast is clear. He saw no one was around, Vayaches Amitri, and he hit the Egyptian, Vayifenei v'cho, and he buries him in the sand. And I heard an unbelievable explanation from this Rav. He says that on a deeper level, we can think about Moshe Rabbeinu having a conflict, a personality, an identity conflict. Who am I? On the one hand, he knew that he was Jewish. On the other hand, he knew that he was quasi-Egyptian, having grown up as an Egyptian prince. And he sees this occurrence in front of him, an Egyptian beating a Jew, and he's deciding, do I do something because I'm Jewish, or am I passive because I'm Egyptian? And internally, he's having this conflict. Vayifen ko, he turns this way, and he says, I'm Egyptian. I'm not going to do anything. On the other hand, Vayifen Cho, he looks the other way, I'm Jewish. I need to act. Which am I? Vayifen Cho, Vayifen Cho. And he said, if I can't decide, Vayar Ki Ein Ish, if I can't decide on my identity, I am a nothing. And it was right then that Moshe Rabbeinu decided, Vayachas Amitri, he killed the Egyptian side of himself, and he said, I am Jewish. A very powerful lesson for all of us. And the Rav said as follows, we all have this conflict. Are we Jewish Americans? Are we American Jews? Are we South Africans? Are we English? Are we Venezuelan? Or are we Jewish? And obviously the message we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu is, Vayach es Hamitzri, it's the Torah values that have to dictate how we act and how we think. And we see, like that, nice word, Harry, you can use that next year. Harry gives a lot of Divrei Torah, weekly podcast Divrei Torah. That was one of my favorite, so we also see that in Sefer Yonah, that Yonah is sleeping while the ship is about to capsize, and they have a lottery. What's going on? Somebody here is responsible for that, and the lottery falls on Yonah. And they wake him up, Yonah, that he's sleeping for. And they ask him a number of questions. And they say as follows, Ma malachtecha, what's your work? What do you do for a living? Ma'ayin tako, where are you from? Ma'artzecha, what land are you from? Ve'emi ze'ah amata, what nation are you from? And what does he answer? He answers, I'm a Yid. I'm a Jew. And my identity, my Jewish identity, answers all of your questions. Ivri anochi, and I fear God. Just a quick story before we introduce the panelists. This concept of the focus on identity is brought out in the following. There was a young boy who was a son of a Talmud of Rav Pam, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vadas. And this son had the following question. He was about to go out into the workforce, and he would be the first person wearing a yarmulke at the accounting firm that he was slated to begin at. And he was either uncomfortable with the concept, or he thought it would not be acceptable. And he turned to Rav Pam. His father said, "Go ask Rav Pam your question if you should take the yarmulke off." And Rav Pam says, "If it's a requirement for you to take the yarmulke off, don't take the job. That's not the job for you. Wear the yarmulke, but three requirements. You have to be the hardest working, you have to be the friendliest, and you have to be the most honest. Those are the three requirements." What Rav Pam was saying is, if taking a job is going to damage your identity as represented by that yarmulke on the head, which imbues us with Yirat Shamayim, you can't do anything to hurt your identity. But with the identity intact, move forward. So having said that, our three panelists, we can easily say about each of them, Ivri Anochi. Whatever they do, they're all successful in their occupations, but primary, foremost to them, is Ivri Anochi. I'm a Jew, that's my identity, we have nothing to hide. In fact, we are incredibly proud of that, despite the fact that we're constantly dealing with the secular world, dealing with adversity even in the secular world. Ivri Anochi, no matter what, no matter what conflict it is, it doesn't matter. We are maintaining who we are. So just to get into the details of the specific people that we have here, if I would say that we could have a dream team on a panel, this is the dream team. I'm going to start with Harry Rothenberg, who I've known for the longest, Harry, 30 years or so, something like that. I remember eating at the Rothenberg's table when we were in law school together. The food was very good. Harry was married, I was not. Always appreciated the great food, Shigeshakoach. Harry is a very successful attorney, but primary to him is the Kiruv organizations that he's involved with, going on trips to Israel, being Makarev, hundreds and hundreds of people. The podcast that he does, the Directory sends out every single week, so we're going to hear from Harry here to Hashem. Charlie Harari wrote the book Unlocking Greatness, which is a perfect description of what he stands for. He's a successful businessman, and he's a successful human being as well, and he's a real inspiration to people worldwide. And last but not least, Rabbi Naftali Horowitz, he's a managing director of Morgan Stanley. He is the author of the book You Revealed by Art School. I did read this book, I did and loved it, and I told Rabbi Naftali that it's a great book. I highly recommend it, as Charlie's, I admittedly haven't read yet. I'm a chassid of Charlie, but I haven't read the book yet, but I did read Natali's book, and it's about discovering the potential within each of us, and he is somebody indeed who perfectly melds the Ivri Anochi with success in the secular realms. And his real focus that he talks about a lot is financial responsibility, and hopefully we'll hear from him tonight on that very issue. So excited to have all of them. We had submissions for questions. We had about 400 questions that were submitted in advance, so I chose a number of them and I gave them out. So we're going to start with those questions. We will hear not from every panelist, not all of them. I'll choose as we go along who will respond to what. But if we can start with the first question, that would be terrific. So who are we going to start with on that one? Charlie, we'll start on that side and then work our way through. Maybe we are drawing all of them on this. We're going to keep the responses of the panelists fairly short so we can get through as many questions as possible.
I would answer it like this. In my humble opinion, there's a certain, depending on what profession you end up in, there's different levels of expectations for socializing. Some, when I mean socializing, I don't mean even one-on-one client work. I mean, some, depending on where you go, in institutions, their teams, they expect their members, when they're especially when they're younger, to go out to events, to clubs, to not clubs, to bars. Maybe there's different events that ultimately dominate when someone starts. So clearly, the external environments in those areas are challenging, and as a Ben Torah, to be in those environments are very challenging. I took a stance pretty early on. Because I was married, I was blessed to be married when I started law. And so you have an excuse when you have a kid at home, but you have to get to play that game. They think you're Amish because you have a kid so young, but it's a whole different story. But you get you. I tried very hard in my career early on to really not be part of the social scene, and as opposed to, much like what Ari said earlier, but to make it up with just working harder. So that's really the first aspect, is to recognize that when people want to socialize with you and when they expect you to come to social events, what they're really doing is trying to get to a place where they feel like you're one of them and they can work with you. And the way most people do it when you're living in the secular world is you go out afterwards. At the end of the day, if you're a good person and you're friendly and you work hard and you're not, and you don't carry your religion as something that is a negative but something that's a positive, and you're a pleasure to be around, and you work hard, you'll end up making it up through your work. So that's the first answer, is that the social events I find to be the most challenging, but for the most part, you don't have to engage in them. And if you do engage in them, like I had to do, like in the summers, go in with the recognition that they're challenging. But I would go one step further. The greatest challenge to a Ben Torah is the lore of materialism. When you're in an institution, there is a general culture of the value of success, of money, of winning, of making partner. And you won't realize it. You know, v'hasser satan milfaneinu ma'achareinu. So the satan in front of you is the one that goes to the bar with your colleagues. So that's hard to resist if they expect you, but you know it's coming. The one that's behind you that you don't see is that environment in the office that is constantly nagging at you to say, success is that corner office, and success is wealth. And you want to know what success was? I got on the partner's jet. And I did this deal, and it was sick. And we met this celebrity. Oh my God, oh my gosh. And then one day you wake up in the morning and you're davening. And by the way, I'm the same way. I'm not a rabbi, I'm not holy, I'm a regular dude. I've got plenty of shachris and minchas and maarevs that I've given to the other side. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, plenty of times that my Torah time was really winning at business time. And you have to recognize that if you're going out into the business world, that world, even if there are good people, is mostly a material race. And if you're competitive and if you want to win, you're going to get lost in that race. And you wake up one morning and you're going to realize that what you're thinking about is winning the race. Whatever it is, if you're a lawyer, it's going to be being a partner. And if you're a banker, it'll probably be something more connected to money. Right? And if whatever you do, and even if you're doing more academia, you want to get tenured. You want to win whatever race you're in. And that silent, pervasive, mind-numbing environment is a total and complete destruction of the Ben Torah's mind. And that will get you to stop preparing for Shabbos. It'll never get you really to violate Shabbos, but you'll get real close, so to speak. It's coming right away. It'll get your mind to be thinking about ways that you can win in business versus ways you can win in Torah, in marriage, and all the stuff that makes it. And what's interesting, and then I'll conclude, is that the guys here for sure that are to my right and keep on going all to my right, when you get to the end of the race, the guys who give up and are now, they lose. The guys who win at the end of the race are the ones that never lose that I'm a Ben Torah first, and Hashem runs this world. But along the way, there's going to be, wherever you are, that environment. And if you're not at least aware of it, it'll start to become the air you breathe. And to me, that's an even bigger risk than the more obvious stuff.
I love that answer. I don't have much to add, so I just want to summarize, okay? What Charlie was saying, in case it wasn't clear about the social events, is stay away from women. Is this on? Stay far away. You know, Midbar Sheker Tirchak, you have to stay away from lying, you have to stay away from people who wear skirts at work. And if that's not politically correct, I apologize. When you're in the Beis Medrash, it's not that often that you run into that type of temptation. The second you leave the Beis Medrash and you get into the office, it's all over. And even if you're not looking for it, it can look for you. But if you don't put yourself into those situations, it will reduce that possibility. And with respect to the second thing that Charlie said about not chasing, like the hamster who's always trying to run and run and run and run, find that gold ring, you may be successful even when you're not chasing it, even if you're not focused on that. Hashem's going to make that decision. But by constantly remembering that there are people who are successful who didn't try that hard, the people who aren't successful who tried incredibly hard, we all know people like that, incredibly hardworking, they just don't make it. And some people, you look at them and you say, how in the world did this knucklehead possibly make so much money? And you realize then that Hashem makes that decision. And so there's no woulda, coulda, shoulda. If it happens, you'll do the right thing and share that with people who are less fortunate. But that can't be who you are if you are chosen for that success. And it can't define you if you're not chosen for that success, because it's not what it's all about.
So, I showed up at the first Wall Street holiday party, and everything you heard about Wall Street holiday parties are true. Drunk women, scantily dressed, absolutely disgusting. And I felt like this is where I need to be because I won the golden ticket. I'm in Wall Street. I walked in there and it was a complete violation of my neshama. Fortunately, I was teaching Kerev at the time, and there was a Kerev class downtown that I needed to get to within an hour or so. I walked up to the managing director or the head of the firm, I don't remember who, his name was John Mann at the time. I said, John, I have a problem. I kind of want to be a team player. I know that everybody has to come to the holiday party. On the other hand, there's 45 Jewish kids waiting for me to come down there and inspire them. John, what do I do? He says, go to the kids. I never step foot in a holiday party again. And this is something that's repeated itself all the time. To Charlie's point, there is an aspect of showing that you're a team player. But I want to tell you something. In Yiddish, we have a word that's called shtaltz. And let me tell you, people will respect you when you stand up for your values and when you show real value. So you can be a team player without going out to drink, and you can be a team player without going target practicing, which is what they do on these retreats, and mechanical bull riding. We went out to Arizona once for a retreat, and in between, you know, the morning sessions and the evening sessions, there was an activity each day. One day was bull riding. The other day was target practice. I was the time of partner, so I could do whatever I want. I had a chauffeur take me to and from the Kollel in Phoenix, where I spent 2 hours learning quality Torah. Well, the first day, everybody came to dinner like this. Have you ever done mechanical bull riding? I have never done it, but apparently this is the way you walk after. The next day, everybody came like this. Oh, my God. Oh, my hand, my chest. I've never shot a rifle in my life, but if it's the first time you've shot a rifle, that's the way you're going to walk. And I was walking into dinner perfectly fine, and everybody was saying, I don't know what Mark does during these breaks, but I should do the same thing as him. Listen, you're a Ben Torah. Stay a Ben Torah. You're going to win with your brain. You're going to win with your honesty, with your transparency, and with your ethics. And all this nonsense, it's all gibberish. And people are going to see that you add value in ways that those people don't. So you can be a team player by contributing real information, real insight. You want to be that person that people come to for real answers. You don't need to be the guy standing next to them while they're shooting their rifle. Shtaltz, my friends, I'm telling you. You have something they don't.
Hi, my name is Katie Klein. Thank you guys so much for coming and inspiring me.
Successful in business. You have a lot of successful clients.
Yeah. Well, first, I think it's... Well, I think the most precious thing that we have is the Shabbos table. Just right out there. What your children are going to become starts and ends with your Shabbos table. That's when you're all sitting around. That's when you're focused. That's when the phones are off and nobody's driving you crazy. First thing is you have to walk the walk. Okay? You can't tell your children that materialism isn't relevant and spend 16 hours deciding which color interior to have in your car and sit there and agonize over whether you should get this model Tesla or that model Tesla. And your children will watch you very, very carefully. So it starts with you. You have to know that if you're going out into the workplace, and Bezus Hashem, you're all going to be very successful. If you leave that black Gemara behind, and you leave that Musa Seder behind, forget it. To Harry's point, to Charlie's point, it's insidious, it'll swallow you alive, and you will be that person one day that you say today, oh God, I never want to be him. So you hold on to that black Gemara, and your children see where your values are, you rarely have to say anything. However, there's always going to be the, but everybody else in my class is blank. Okay? And this is where you are supposed to instill in your children constantly what's important and what's not. I have an easier time because I have uber wealthy clients, and I also have a lot of uber unhealthy clients. So I see the misery of wealth. I see the catastrophic outcomes of family feuds, of divorces, of kids overdosing on drugs. I see that the accessibility of anything that you want will completely blow a person's life apart. I tell these stories to my children. I want them to see what I see on a daily basis. And I infuse in them Torah values by the Shabbos table. So, Baruch Hashem, we can afford, but that doesn't mean that we do. And that's the powerful message. I can, but I don't, because the Torah mandates precious, and every time you indulge, there's going to be a pitfall on the other side.
Question number three. Okay, so what do you do to stay happy? Everyone has tough times, everyone has rocky times, and we are curious, how do you get through when you're having challenges? Harry, when we put that on the...
So this is not that easy. It's not something for that everybody can just get up and go out and do, but someday, just keep your eye on the ball. When the time comes, you go out and you have grandchildren. They have a remarkable way of putting a smile on your face. And before that, for those of you who aren't yet married, you should find the right person and have children. I remember hearing my father say this. I grew up in a big family. I'm, thank God, the eldest of eight, and I have eight of my own. And everything else in my life is a footnote. So my father used to say that no matter what would go on at work, you know, some days were great days, settle a huge case, and some days were bad days. You know, you get a bad decision, you lose a case. He said, but how can I be in a bad mood when I come home and there are all these smiling faces? And so I don't need anything more than anything that bounces. As long as I'm in the same room with one of my boys and there's something that can bounce and we can throw back and forth, even if I'm talking to my wife, but I'm catching and throwing, sometimes at the Shabbos table when she walks out, I catch it and I hide it, okay? And when she comes back in, it's that simple. And then separate and apart from that is that I don't have to tell you that we've talked about this already, we'll talk about it more. You get asked two questions according to some chazal when you get upstairs. You'd think you'd be asked 613 questions, or at least the ones that apply to you. Two questions. Number one, honest in business. Number two, were you koveya itim? It's that important. And it's even more important when you're not in yeshiva. Even if you're in yeshiva university, you're still in yeshiva university. Presumably you do some learning. When you go out to work, it's very difficult in the morning and in the evening. And so you've got to set those times. And in my mind, the only way it's going to work is if you're learning something that really, really excites you. There are a few things during my week, I don't know anything other than the kids or the grandkids when they're around visiting, that excite me more than my learning. And if your learning is not exciting you, then I hate to say it, no offense to anybody in the room, because maybe there are chavrusas in the room, but you may need to find another chavrusa, or you may need to find another seder, or you may need to find another topic. Because if your learning isn't exciting you, it's not a problem with the learning, and it's not a problem with you, it's a problem with the shidduch. You got to fix that shidduch, change your learning partner, change what you're learning, or change both.
Thank you, Harry. Question number four. Rabbi Stephen.
Shalom. My name is Aaron Stuva. I'm a mental health professional in Rockland County. And my question is, what's the number one quality that's found in successful people to deal with?
Charlie. Emotional awareness. The number one quality, and I think statistically this is backed up, and I want to make one comment, remind me for a second, Naftali said something very important, I'll just double up on your question earlier, but let me just ask it this one. Emotional awareness. People that are successful understand intuitively that there is no chance of achieving anything that is of great value alone. It just doesn't work. When you're a kid, you can be the top athlete in your yeshiva game, but when you're playing in the big leagues, you never win a championship alone. And so a lot of what business is the understanding of who needs to be part of a larger team, who needs to be motivated, how do we create a clear strategy, everything related to other people. When people are emotionally aware, A, they take the time to understand themselves. Really important, and yeshiva is a great time. And there was once a time that I heard of yeshivas that you would go away to like Slobodka and you would spend time building yourself and understanding yourself. And I'm sure that happens here too, but there was once a time where yeshiva was like, you know, hasta luego for a long time. And you developed an awareness of who you are so that you could be able to know why you're upset at this and upset at that and this mida and that mida. When you get into the work world and the business world, as you climb the ladder higher and higher, you go from being the recipient of work to being ultimately a recipient delegator to ultimately, ideally, being a delegator, being someone who has to figure out how to make things happen. You do that when you're sensitive to people, when you're able to empathize with people, when you're able to see someone that looks not like you but find what is like you and see them as human beings, and understand how you feel, understand how they feel, and be able to understand how to engage them in meaningful work, how to find out what they do well. These are, when we talk about success, this is what success, in my opinion, looks like. I spent enough time with you, individual who's not part of my religion, who doesn't look like me, who doesn't share my values, but who's working with me and for me, to understand that you're really good at this and not this. And I'm spending enough time of my time, not ignoring you, but figuring out how to motivate you, to put you part of a larger team, for us to be able to accomplish something great together. And so IQ is critical. You got to know how to do things, and knowledge is critical. You got to know what you're doing, the content. But there's, in my opinion, nothing more critical than emotional intelligence and emotional awareness. I want to just add one thing while I have the mic. Natalia made a great point before. What you care about is what your kids will care about. And I'll share one anecdote. A friend of mine once said to me that in America today, there is no more Masorah. It used to be in the old days, there was like Masorah, not Jewish Masorah. Masorah, right? There was, you know, they wore gloves and hats to baseball games, and you know your dad. Goes except for one thing that has lasted. What is the only Masorah in America today? The only Masorah left in America? Sports, right? You take a kid from Boston, dad's from Boston, kid was born in New York. He's a Red Sox fan. He'll go to Yankee Stadium, sit in the bleachers. He'll at the risk of death, he'll never take off. Am I right? He'll never take off his red. Why? So I once heard Rav say, when you watch your father scream at a television, that becomes embedded in your brain as important. You'll all be dads one day, Meretz Hashem. Your kids are going to watch what you scream at. You scream at a Gemara, you can be a billionaire. Gemara's number one. You scream at a dollar you lost, or you spend an extra buck at a restaurant, you freak out, you could be the Rosh Yeshiva. Cash is king. Never forget that your connection to Yiddishkeit in your gut will determine what your kid's connection is. But back to your point, emotional intelligence.
Okay, very good. Question number five.
My name is Yosef Feld, and the question is, you guys are in the workplace a lot of the time. How do your kids think you spend your time, and do they ever think that you're not home often enough?
This is actually a follow-up to what you just mentioned, Charlie. You just mentioned what you are passionate about and your kids will be passionate about. So why don't we leave the mic with you and maybe you can respond to that.
Well, my kids think that I type on the computer all day. They have no idea what I do all day. The question is, how do you spend more time with your children? Is that what it is?
The
first one is, what do my kids think I do?
And so, do they appreciate what you do? Do they understand what you do? And would they like more time with you?
So, I mean, I think the kids... I don't think the kids really care. Let me say it like this. If you care what you do and that's your identity, then your kids will care what you do. If your identity really is something tethered to Ruchnius, to your point, Yona is, I'm a Jew, right? And when I speak to the people to my right, their first question, I know them both well. What do you do? And they're not going to say their business first. It's so critical right now in your life, really critical, that you start to forge your path in Yiddishkeit. Which means, if davening stinks, it's not going to get better when you leave yeshiva. And if learning doesn't taste well, it's not going to get better. And if you're not connected to the community, and you're not giving yourself in any which way, maybe in shul, but usually you're not going to connect. You have to start now to tether yourself tighter to Ruchnius. Because if you don't, what happens is you form your identity with your job. And that is dangerous. Because you don't want to be a lawyer first. You want to be a Jew first. And that's going to affect everything. So your kids will pick up on how and what daddy identifies with. And that will be the most important thing. And so if you're identified with your Yiddishkeit, and you're involved, and you believe, and you're working on your learning. You don't have to nail it. You don't have to be an amazing learner, but you're working on it. And you're working on your time with Hashem. And you're really taking it seriously. When you have the luxury of being in yeshiva, you're building, you're laying the cable for your marriage, for your fatherhood. When that becomes your essence, what you do for a living is less relevant. The reason why it's important for you is because what has happened from the 1960s till today is that it used to be in the old days, you worked in GM, and then you died in GM. You worked at Davis Polk, and then you retired from Davis Polk. Those days are largely over. Most of the jobs you'll have, you'll probably leave and start and leave. Jobs now are created mid-cycle. The jobs you think you're going to get don't exist yet when you get out there. And some of the greatest, most successful people are sitting in offices and they go, wait, what? I could do that. And you can't. And you figure it out. And now you're leading the way in cryptocurrency. And now you're figuring out how to do a new type of non-traded REIT. So most of the things that you're going to do day to day probably don't exist right now. Or if they do, you don't know of them. Your job can't be you. Because if that becomes your identity, it'll tether you to less opportunities in business, and it will turn the whole relationship your kids have to work to, my dad's a. You're not a anything. You're a neshama. You're a piece of us. And the ability to connect that for real here, for real, when you get out in the workplace, and to never forget that, will change how your kids see you. Because they'll see the person and not the job. And that'll help them realize it doesn't really matter. Now, when it comes to time, this is super important, in my opinion. This is happening right now for you. Right now, in your day, you're prioritizing your time. I want to learn more? Do you? Because if you do, you want to learn more than watching X. Right? For those who are going to be lawyers, 1L, I don't know how it is today, they probably let up a lot, because I think the world lets up in general, but when I was around, 1L was a crazy year. They killed, am I wrong? Crazy. So a guy came to me for advice. I want to get A's, but I want to keep my... I play basketball twice a week, and I'm part of 3 fantasy clubs, and I like to go to football games every Sunday, and I go out hanging with the guys on Tuesdays. How do I do that? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And we'll get 3 of yourself? His priority scale was, I want to do everything. But I want to have everything. That's cool. Kids have that. Kids want to be firemen and doctors and Indian chiefs. And one thing you'll learn, last night I was at a wedding and a guy had the greatest line. I said, how's the guy's a successful guy? I go, how are you doing? He goes, I'm doing much better than I was doing a couple years ago. I said, really? What's your secret? He goes, I'm doing less better. Godless. Doing less better is a sign of maturity. Doing everything, kids do everything. As you grow in life, you have to always be aware of your priorities. And your priorities are forming now. Your kids, your wife, need to know they're number one. You may not spend as much time with them as you want, but they have to know they're the priority. And you show them that when you have time out of work and you're spending it with them. If you're constantly trying to hop one more thing, they're not the priority. And so if today, as where you are in life, you're aware that your actions are really dictating your priorities, it'll be easier as you get older to understand that yesod. And then as you develop families, always make sure that you're showing and reprioritizing so that wherever you are, they are on the ladder, you're spending as much time as you can with them. And they'll appreciate that. And they'll know that daddy may be working. There are times I'm traveling and working, but I'm still his top priority.
Thank you, Charlie. Question number 6.
First of all, thank you so much for coming in. My name is Amar Whedon. I'm a junior here at YU. And my question is, how have each of you worked on Emunah and Bitachon?
Harry, love to hear from you on that.
Maybe my favorite question, and it may be the most important thing that exists for us. So I want to share with you the following, because it's the most important bit of business advice that I ever heard. It came from the Torah, and it came from an unlikely commentator, not someone you'd think would be writing about business, but he did. So Parshas Bahar, we get the mitzvah of Shemitah. Hashem tells us 6 years, plant, reap, eat, 7th year, let it lay fallow. Okay, and then after giving us the laws, Hashem picks up on it again, and he says, for 6 years, you're going to plant, you're going to reap, and you're going to eat until you're satisfied. Then the 7th year, you're going to let it lay fallow. And if you ask, what am I going to eat during the 7th year? Don't worry, because in the 6th year, I'm going to give you a triple blessing. You're going to have enough for the 6th year and the 7th year into the 8th year. Okay. Rav Yashav asks the following question. When did the Jews ask that question? What are we going to eat? Okay? And he answers, they didn't wait until the eve of the first 7th year after the conquest when the Shemitah laws went into effect, because we're Yidden. We start worrying about food from the first second we wake up in the morning. So they started asking that question as soon as the laws went into effect in year 1. Hey, what are we going to eat in year 7? Don't worry, triple blessing in year 6. So what happens? Some people believed, and they said, Hashem said, eat until you're satisfied, we're going to do that. No reason to store any food. Other people said, you know, you never know. Maybe in year 6 it'll be the World Cup. Hashem will be distracted watching. You know, maybe he's a fan of France, whatever, and he'll forget the triple blessing. Let's just, on the safe side, squirrel away some extra food just in case. So they did that. Little silo. Didn't eat until they were satisfied. Left a little food. Now the 6th year comes. Triple blessing to everybody. Great. So now the next time around, nobody's going to squirrel away food. They saw. Hashem came through. The people who believed and the people who didn't believe. So Rav Yashav follows up. He said, you think that Hashem put that question in the Torah because it was going to be asked once in history? One time during those first 6 years? He says, no, 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 no. Here's what happened. That 6th year came. Hashem looked around. The people who believed in him, who did not store any food, they understood. When he said, eat until you're satisfied during the first 6 years, that was a command. They believed in him. They got a triple bounty. That's an open miracle. The people who squirreled away food did not. They didn't get the triple blessing. Because if you don't believe in Hashem and in his promise to do miracles for you, then you don't get the miracle. Hey, you squirreled away food. You're on your own. So now what happens is the next 6 years. The guys who didn't store food, they believed in Hashem. They got the triple blessing. They're good to go. The guys who did store food are like, whoo, good thing we squirreled food away the last time Hashem didn't come through. Guess we'll do the same thing. So Rav Yashav says, that question, what are we going to eat in the 7th year, is the question that every one of us asks ourselves all the time when we're out in business. Do we trust Hashem or not? He puts a number next to our name every Rosh Hashanah. And I guarantee you, he does not say, Naftali, listen, I put a really big number next to your name, but you got to work with me. You got to cheat a little bit on the taxes. I mean, come on. You got to lie a little bit. You got to steal a little bit. You got to cut some corners. No. Do we believe that he put the number next to our name? And we show him. So if we lie, if we cheat, if we steal, if we cut corners, we're showing him, I don't believe in you. And if we show him that we don't believe in him, well then guess what? You're not getting a miracle. So by our actions, we can talk all we want. Of course I have emuna. Of course I have bitachon. Of course it comes from Hashem. And then you go out and cheat on your taxes. Well, you can say it all you want, but obviously you don't believe it. And so our actions can belie our thoughts in that area, and Hashem knows whether we believe or not. And the more we believe, you'll hear this, I'm sure, from everybody on this panel, and I can tell you this, that the more I do for Hashem, and the more sacrifice, and whatever case I could have gotten if I had worked on Shabbos, or made that call, or cut corners, Hashem makes it up time and time again, through miracles, open, hidden, etc. We have to show them we believe in it.
Thank you, Harry. Rav Natale, I'd love to hear from you on this as well, because if I remember correctly from You Revealed, you do discuss this in the book. It is sold out, by the way, for those who are here also for this farm sale. It is sold out, and an author loves to hear that there's nothing left of his sefer on the bookshelves.
So, one of the best parts of working on Wall Street is that it's either you have bitachon or you die. And I mean it. You cannot possibly do what I do on a daily basis without either doing drugs or doing Chayvus HaLevavos. And it's a lot cheaper to do Chayvus HaLevavos. So I found out the hard way that Musa Seder in Yeshiva was the most important preparation for working on Wall Street. I found it out the hard way because how long is Musa Seder in YU? What is that? What's Musa Seder? Musa Seder was sandwiched between second Seder and dinner. And if the Mashkiach was out that day, there was not a single person there. I despised Musa going through yeshiva. I found Musa because it was my cocaine or marijuana, because I was losing my mind. And if I didn't learn Chavis Alav Shar B'Tachim 500 times, I didn't learn it once. So I picked up a Musa Sefer, and it's become my greatest companion. I don't go a day without learning Musar. I teach Chavis Halvavas for the last 5 years. Every day in the elevator, I say Ani Mamim, the first Ani Mamim. Shabaris Baruch Shema Yubaru Manikul Chal Abruim V'hu Levadi Osav Ha'isav V'yasa Chal Amasim. When the market's crashing, when the market's going up, when you're getting promoted, when you're sitting in a corner office and you think you're at the top of the world, you say the Ani Mamim, you realize you're off of the Afer. All this can come crashing down, just like Bear Stearns and Lehman, in a heartbeat. And when the world is crashing down, and you walk out of your office, you walk out, you look up at the sky, and you say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, none of this matters. This is all a mirage. So, you didn't learn Musar in Yeshiva? I'm telling you, it's going to be your lifeline. Become best friends with Chavis HaLevavos. Become best friends with Chazanish Muna B'Tachin. Any sefer that you can grab onto that speaks to you, it should be your companion and it should be in your bag every day.
Thank you. Question number 7.
Okay. Wait till you hear the accent.
Very good. Okay. So it wasn't exactly my question. I didn't actually have a question about this piece of paper. So, yes.
Should I do to be able to support my family without having to work a billion hours?
Maybe move to South Africa. Let's stay with you. Become a high income earner. I don't believe that people understand that being a high income earner does not mean that you spend your days and nights in the office. I know people that work 3 times as many hours as I do and don't have enough money. So, we're not going to get into whether some people are destined not to earn a lot of money or some people are not destined. See my book. But you can be a father, you can be a husband, and you can be a high income earner at the same time. My bracha to every one of you is that you appreciate that if you can learn a Blat Gemara and you can learn a Taisvis, and you can learn a Rambam, and a Kesef Mishnah, and if you can go even further than that and learn a Chedushe, Reb Chaim Halevi, al Rambam, you are better prepared to be a higher income earner than people that went to the greatest colleges. Okay, so you should be striving to live, working as smart as you can, working your way up in a way, leveraging your brain, leveraging your talents to earn as much money as you possibly can. Klal Yisrael needs high income earners. We, Klal Yisrael, are built to get to the top. We don't have to sacrifice. We don't have to spend our nights in the office. We work smarter. We build strong reputations. And with HaKadosh Baruch Hu Siyata Deshmaya, it happens. And I bless every one of you. We were not built to be mediocre. We were built to be great. Strive for it, and you daven for it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bless you with it.
Beautiful. Aaron.
I want to add something to that and pick up on something that Charlie and Naftali were talking about earlier. There are certainly at least a minimum amount of time that you have to work. As Chazal say, you have to work the amount that it doesn't look like a nes when Hashem gives you income. Tricky to figure out what that is. But as you've heard, it's important to spend time with your children, and it's important to triage that time. So I will tell you that one of my biggest regrets and mistakes is that with my older children, when they were born, they did not come with an instruction manual. I've told this to my oldest son, you know, often. I was 24 when he was born. And the mistake I made is that there were certain times when I could not be home because I was doing work. And there were other times on occasion when I could have been home, but I opted otherwise. And that to me is a cardinal offense. I recognized it, I corrected it, and I no longer do it. Lidugma, when I was younger, being a big sports fan, a friend would call me up, I got legend seats to the Yankees. How can you say no to legend seats to the Yankees? Well, let me tell you something. If you're not home often enough to see your children, which means any time you have a chance to go home, you go see them, you don't go to the Yankees game, even if you have legend seats. And so I can't remember the last time that I went to a game without one of my kids. Now if I'm going with the kid. You can't give up those opportunities. Whether they know, whether they don't know, every time you have discretionary time, you have to spend it with them. Somebody asked before about how much time do your kids want to spend with you? They want to spend more, full stop, at any age. They may not say that, but they want more than anything to spend time with you. And you can't make that mistake. I have a friend who called me much younger. He's a relative. And he said, you know, you really, I learned your lesson. I said, what are you talking about? He says, somebody called me up. He was working as a second year attorney. He says, somebody called me up and they offered me legend seats behind home plate. And I told them, no, I have to go home and I have to spend time with my kids. Because what you want to avoid is you get successful and you have what to impart. And you have to do that. You have to not only donate money, everybody knows that. You have to also donate time. Same obligation. Donate 10 to 20% of your income. You have to donate 10 to 20% of your time. But you still got to make the time for your family. I have a friend whose wife was sitting Shiva. She told him, and he told me, that she could not believe the number of people that came to the Shiva house and told her, you don't know who I am. You wouldn't know this. Your father saved my life. The next person, your father saved my life. The next person, you have no idea what your father did to me. And she finished the Shiva, and she said to her husband, it was incredible to see all the things my father did for people, for Klal Yisrael. And then she paused and she said, but why wasn't he there for me? And you can't have that. Aleph base starts with an Aleph and a base because Aleph bias. Your kids come first.
Powerful language. Why wasn't he there for me? Question number 8. Rabbi Schloss.
Thank you so much for coming. My name is Eli Schloss. I'm Junior. How are you? Sometimes things
are long, hard, stressful. But while Talmud Torah is still a value that we hold very strongly, what motivates you after a long, hard day to sit down and start to learn?
Charlie, you've got the sacred for me.
So I'll tell you two things that I've learned from people greater than myself that I try to keep. Sometimes I fail, sometimes I succeed. Understand first and foremost that everything in this world that you're going for is when you get it, if it's material, once it touches your fingers, you're going to realize it wasn't worth it. So just understand that whatever it is that we're looking for in life, the way it works with materialism, as important as it is, And as much as it's exciting, it's going to, you know, it's ultimately going to disintegrate in your hands. If you watch Super Bowl, what's amazing is right now, although it was hard to see the Philadelphia Eagles lose because of my good friend Harry, who's right next to me, and we wanted them to win even though they did beat our Giants, if you'll see today, really, 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 it's gone. Like, it's gone. And in a month from now, like, shkayach, it's the next. It's always the next. The things that you're doing in life that are forever are the things that should be your priority. Your ability to be a Baal Torah, to know something, to actually be learning in your life is really the thing that's going to give you the most sipuk hanefesh if you do it in a way that gives you joy beyond everything that you're going for. And never forgetting that. Looking at people that are, when I look at somebody who I respect, yes, they're like Naftali said, we've lost a certain amount of like, we've built this like sort of like victim-ish thing about like tuition and like that type of stuff. But like, we can't have kids because it's a lot of tuition and it's too high and everything's too expensive. Yeah, it's expensive and Hashem runs the world. And yes, at any moment he could take or give. But what Naftali said a second ago was so critically important about what you have to think about. What Harry said also is important, but his one point about stop seeing yourself as being potentially mediocre. Like, you're a part of the Am HaNifchar. That means you walk around. When you're in the office and you wear a yarmulke with pride, you're going to be probably, we all are, you'll be probably 1%, unless you work in a front place, which is great. If you work in an institution, you're 1% wearing a yarmulke. You wake up in the morning and go, Ha'olam Nivra Bishvili. They're living in Hashem's world. Like, it's my dad's world. Like, I hate to break it to them, but like, my dad built the place. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm wearing yarmulke to remember my... Like, you have to have, not arrogance, but a certain pride of what it means to be carrying the torch of Torah. And that has to dominate your thinking, because if it doesn't, you're going to sidestep, and you're gonna act as if like you're embarrassed to leave on a Friday at 2 o'clock in the winter, or you're embarrassed. Like I tell my I've worked myself up, but like my people know that I turn into a pumpkin, I'm out. Like Pesach, I'm out. Like if you don't have that pride, then it's really gonna be hard for you to be able to deliver on that. So recognize that when you look at people that at least that I respect in their 60s and their 70s, in the business world, everybody is either a massive Baal Chesed or a Talmid Chacham. Like, you look up at somebody in the business world. So the guy's achieved success business-wise. Who do I look up to and say, I want to be like, in the successful business world, with the wealth, they either have to be an incredible Baal Chesed or a Talmid Chacham. Because they have to tether themselves to Ruchnias. So you have to always have that in your head. Because if you don't always have the end in mind, the sea of materialism will suck you out. You have to always see yourself as the end. You're going to Hashem with the same self, you're going to be 70 and 80 one day. And hopefully at that point, you'll be able to work less. When you're that person, which you're always thinking about, you have to always ask yourself, I'm going to be 80. Do I want to get to 80 years old and not know anything in learning and not be the person that can help people, even if I have a couple of bucks along the way? Or do I want to be that person that when I get to my end of my life, whether I make it or not in this dollar amount, I know something. I'm learning something. I'm a person that is holding in Torah. And keeping in your mind that vision of who you want to be will help drive you at tough times. So that's the image. Let me give you the practice. Itim. There's two things that I've learned in my life, right? Itim and Chiyuvim. And they're different, and they're both critical, right? Itim are times. You have to begin in your life now to see your times and give certain times to Hashem. Most likely, if any of you are going to go into the working world, you will not be able to dedicate time to God in learning during the workday. Unless you work for your dad or your father-in-law, and they're like, do whatever you want, which was a whole other conversation you should probably talk to Naftali about. He'll give you advice about that. But if you work in an institution and a company that has lots of secular people, most likely from like 9-ish, 8, 9-ish to 5, 6-ish, there's no chance that you're going to sit in front of a Gemara and know what's going on. It's not reality. You have to realize, and you have to start now to think about mornings and nights. Those are your times. Some people, they wake up early and they dominate it. Some people, they can't get up early, but come nighttime, they turn it off, they get a cup of coffee, and they can plow. But understand now, if you don't have time that is your time, that does not belong, like Shabbos does not belong to the working world, no matter what. If you don't have time, now that you're younger, you could still live in the world of middle. You have schedules, so you can hop and out, fine. But you have to start to get in your head, summer associates, summer jobs, your first jobs. Don't start 4 years in. Right away, mornings or nights. And that's your spot. For me, it was nights when I was a lawyer. It became mornings. I'm sure I should always have it. Because once the day starts, my head is lost. But you have to realize that. You have to find Eitan. And those are your times. It's Shabbos. You don't have a phone on. It's Shabbos. Between X and Y before Shacharis is Shabbos. And if you start when you're young, you will see that that time is the sweetest, most enjoyable time you're going to have all day. Because you're free. And to Harry's point, don't worry. Shemitah, Kodesh Baruch Hu is not going to penalize you for giving him an hour of learning. It's not how it works. But you got to build it when you're young. Number two, I got this from a Rav in Eretz Yisrael who learned from Chaim Kanievsky. Chaim Kanievsky was famous for many things. In my opinion, he was most famous for what's called Chiyuvim. Every day, he finished Shas every year. His kids got married, he still had to do his quota of learning. There was a big thing going on, and there was a klal. He still did his learning. There was a hurricane in Bnei Brak, he still did his learning. Chiyuvim means you have to identify, and I would do it now. This is what I learn every day. Don't do too much, I won't do it. Every day I learn this much Gemara. Every day I learn this much Halacha. Every day I learn this much Musar. This is what I do. If I've got a final, I got a final. If it's Tisha B'Av, I'm not going to bed until 1 o'clock. Look at it, it's fine. And if you build the muscle that says, I have to finish a certain amount every day, from now on, B'li Neder, B'li Shvua, no matter what. Shabbos, Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av, final seasons, March Madness. I don't care. You will start in your head to stop coming up with the excuses of, I'm too tired, it's too late, I don't get it anyways, I'll hop it in the morning, all that stuff that's just excuses. And when you get to the working world, and you're working like crazy, and you're in the car, and you didn't finish your Gemara, you're going to be finishing your Gemara. Or if you're sitting on a panel with people you love, and you didn't finish your Gemara today, you're sitting with a Gemara, because you didn't finish it. So what are you going to do? Do it at 11 o'clock at night? You have no choice. You got to get it done. Not that I always do that. I fail many times. But I want you to realize that. And think in your head, Eitim Chiyuvim. Eitim Chiyuvim. And then don't worry about it. Because if you put the right habits in place and you multiply habits with time, magic happens. Good habits with time is greatness. And you have this great opportunity because you're in NYU. You're in the lab of your life now. You could start these things. You could start building the habits here and now that you're going to take with you in your marriage, you're going to take with you in your jobs, and you'll wake up one morning and there won't have to be this 24-hour thing that you learn Shas. You'll just wake up one morning and without realizing it, you'll have finished Shas many times. You'll know something in Halacha. You'll be a different person. And it won't even destroy your life because it's just Eitim Chiyuvim. It's just who you are. It's like eating and working and exercise. It's just part of who you are, and you're habituating it.
Make it your routine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to add a practical suggestion for how to incorporate your Eitim and your Chiyuvim, because I love that, the way Charlie phrased it. There's a reason that Hashem spent 40 days and nights with Moshe Rabbeinu. He could have just said, Moshe, hold still. This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. Zapped him on the forehead, and boom, the entire Torah is in his head. And instead, they spent 40 days and 40 nights shtigging together, because that's how you learn. You learn b'chavrusa. And if you're going to try to make sure that you keep up with your Eitim and you keep up with your Chiyuvim, there's no better way to do it than to do it with someone else, because now you have accountability. And particularly if you do it at a time that's difficult, Many years ago when I first started work, I had a 5:30 a.m. chavrusa, and I can tell you, in the very rare instances when one of us would miss it, oversleep, the other one was ready to strangle that person, to dangle him out the window by his ankles. I'm here at 5:30 in the morning and you blow me off? Now, my kids are older, they stay up later, I stay up later. I learn three nights a week with Rav and Eretz Yisrael, Rosh Kollel, at 10:05 p.m. Not the most convenient time, it's a little late for me. It's 5:05 a.m. for him. Which means that if I don't reschedule during the day and he goes to sleep, yarav vayavar, unless it's literally hospital, a medical emergency, you think I'm going to blow off a chavrusa because I'm tired, because I had a long day? I mean, this guy got up at 4:45 in the morning to learn with me? You have accountability. It's going to go a long way towards making sure that you show up. It's one thing to have the theoretical, or it's on my schedule, I was supposed to learn, oops, I missed it, versus you got somebody waiting for you looking at their watch. I get a tonight we rescheduled, you know, a text at 10:05, ready, and I got to be ready.
Thank you. Question number 9.
That's a question that, it's a great question, and it's an evolving thing. As you get older and you get more mature, you have more experiences, you're going to find that your heart is going to be drawn to different types of Torah. I think it's very important not to pigeonhole yourself and say, this is what everybody's doing, this is what I'm going to do. Everybody's joining a Halacha Yomi program, so I'm going to shove myself into that program. Pasuk says that a person learns where his heart desires. Okay, so my evolution, if you will, over my life, Musar came much later. Daf Yomi came much earlier. Chumash Rashi, Ramban, Arachayim is something that's happened recently. Studying Kabbalah, going through Nefesh HaChayim from beginning to end several times, was something I never dreamt that I would do. I've learned Tanya several times. What you should do is, in each aspect of your life, you stop and you remind yourself that there's a huge library out there. And I nash around, and I see what's drawing me at that particular time, because your neshama ultimately needs nourishment. And different types of Torah will give you nourishment as your life goes on. It doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's Tyra. I just want to respond to the last question. What was your name?
Ellie.
I've gotten that question 1,000 times. What no one's ever asked me is, Naftali, how did you manage to eat dinner every night as you became a Wall Street professional? Nobody ever asked me that question. How did you manage to eat lunch every day? The answer is, nobody asks that question because, of course, you eat dinner and lunch. Let me tell you something. To Charlie's point, you will realize one day, if you don't let go of Torah, you will realize that it's better to skip dinner or lunch than to skip your Daf Yomi. Mark my words, it's more important for you. Eitz Chaim Hila Machzikim Ba, you will drown if you don't have it. You will develop a ritual and a habit that will be such that you will not be able to go to sleep at night if you didn't learn your chiyuvim. You will literally break out in hives and a cold sweat before you do so. It becomes second nature to you. When you see that it's crucial and vital, I don't go to weddings unless it's a very close relative. If I do, I say mazel tov and I leave. I don't give up my daf yomi for anything in the world. My daughter's wedding, I go out and I study my daf. That's my chiyudim, that's my itim. Because I know that if I let go, I'm dead. Period.
Wow. That was awesome. feeling guilty here.
Can I just Can I just jump in on the Svarm stuff? Just
what was that?
The Svarm?
Please. We have that on video. I haven't watched it over and over. Naftali, thank you.
To Rabbi Naftali's point, which and he's right in a lot of ways, but I want to explain it in maybe, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody who was very big into health, and he was explaining to me that many times he'll train people, and they'll come to the gym and they'll be like incredibly fit, and then like you won't see them for like 6 months, and they'll gain all the weight back, and he'll say what happened, and they'll say yantif. He's like, what happened? And what'll happen is on yantif, be like, it's yantif. I can't eat that. And by the time you get through like sukkahs, you've eaten so much that you've just let go of exercise and you can't get yourself back to the gym. What Naftali's saying is so critical. And when you get it, when you let go, you just allow yourself, you're like, oh, I could use that extra hour doing nothing. Your brain likes to do nothing. The Yetzirah loves to do nothing. It just takes a week. Try Ben Zman. You could be rocking the Zman. You ever had that? You ever have like a, remember you were in Eretz Yisrael and you had like a six Zman and you came out and you were like rocking and rolling and you're like, oh my God, maybe I should give up my whole life and learn, right? And then like you go like to like 2 days in Ben Zmanim and you're like, wait, what's a Gemara again? Like, did I learn? Like you, 2 days in Ben Zmanim and you miss Minyan. It's incredible how quick a great streak of learning goes when you're in that world. And he's right, it's a raging river but if you hold on, you'll never let go. I want to just double down what he said earlier. It's so important that you are always in a safer and that you're always excited about something, because you always want to be motivating yourself to be learning, to be in that space. One thing that gets lost a lot, I think, and maybe my Sephardism is coming out, so I'll recommend it. You know what gets dropped a lot, which should not get dropped? Tehillim. Maybe just for the Sephardim, you'll get it. But like, we just drop Tehillim. Somewhere along the way, like, you just drop Tehillim. It's a mistake. Tehillim is an incredibly powerful book that does a lot of great things for you. And even if it's a few kapitlach a day, there's something incredibly powerful about always, after davening with Tehillim. It shifts you from a intellectual, even intellectual half emotional experience, to an emotional experience. And so as you're going through your day and wherever you're doing, if you have no Tehillim in your diet, put in like a couple of pitlach a day, and you'll find over time that it softens your heart a little bit, and allows that connection to Hashem, and it's unfortunately an undervalued asset that we have.
All right.
It's not just a Sephardim. I actually took on during COVID to add two after each tefillah, and I've kept it up.
So I know
you'd be proud to hear that. I want to just add one more wrinkle to the learning. And it's incredibly important. Like Naftali said, it's, you know, you're a fish out of water. You're done if you leave the safer. But there's a reason that when we go to a wedding, even Naftali, if he shows up for 5 minutes, I assume a quick dance, maybe sometimes on occasions, very quick dance. But the dance is always in a circle, and there's a reason it's in a circle. Because when you're in a circle, you reach out your hand, and somebody grabs it, and they start pulling you. You need somebody in your life who inspires you, not just a safer. You need a person with whom you have regular relationship, who inspires you. And you're in the circle, you reach out your hand, and now you're pulling someone else along in the circle. It's equally important for you to have someone whom you inspire. It's fantastic when we learn, but you can't compare. It's not an accident when we have the Chazal that says, I learned more from my students than I did from my Rebbeim. Because when you're learning and you doze off, you're in the middle of a great shiur and you just doze off for a second, or you daydream for a second and you missed it. Okay, unless the teacher stops the Rebbe right there at that second and says, what did I just say? Doesn't happen that often. You missed it. But when you're teaching, you're in the middle of teaching someone and you... Wait, I'm sorry, what was I talking about? You can't lose your train of thought. You have to master it. You have to own it. There's no daydreaming. And so if you know when you're learning something, you tell me. If you knew after this event that there were people in another room and you would have to repeat everything you heard tonight, would you not have been paying attention? I hope you were paying attention. But even more closely, So if you can set that up, and it can be anybody. You can inspire your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your cousin, your aunt, who would love to hear from you in a few minutes a day or in an hour a week, whatever it is. But there should be somebody simultaneous in your life who pulls you along and somebody whom you pull along.
Thank you. Very nice. Question number 10. Yosef.
So how can, when joining a job, an occupation, how can someone show his coworkers that, yes, he's a team player, he cares about the success of the company, but at the same time, he cares about his family, religion, community, etc., and not come off as someone who's unfriendly or not a team player?
How do we say Amla Badad Yishkon, but at the same time, be a team player? Who wants to take this?
I could start.
Charlotte.
You guys will... Unless you're working in a incredibly self-focused place, and some of the startups are, like some of these like new startups, they're just incredibly like self-focused. Most places that you go to today understand the concept of individuality, and faith and family is not a contradiction to hard work and dedication in the office. So remember that, I forgot who said this earlier. I think it was you. Remember that you're on. This is a hard thing for people to get. You have to get this. This is an important transition to all you need to understand. You're in a YU right now. So, like, I don't know, wearing a yarmulke isn't that a big deal. So when you walk in the management, I was like, oh, my God, see, this guy's got a yarmulke on his head. No, you have to understand, and it's hard to understand this because you're young and you're like, what's the difference? The minute you get out into that world, you stand out. It just is what it is. And most people, maybe it's changing because of the craziness we're living right now, will not say a word about it. But nobody, remember, it's crazy, but I want you to like really like digest this. You really are a piece of a greater nation that you are representing. So it's a big, and the three of us can sit here for an entire night and tell you crazy stories that happened to us that have nothing to do with us. It has to do with some other Jew in a yarmulke that is either pro or con. And we don't know them, but it doesn't matter. To the rest of the world, we're related to them. It happened to me 3 hours ago about a business opportunity. The guy's from, and like it's all connected because everyone Orthodox knows everybody Orthodox. You all, and this is so critical, everybody. You are on. Always. You're always on. You ever have that? Did your mom, you ever come home and like your mom was yelling at you for something? And she's like yelling at you, and then the phone rings. She's like, "I can't believe you! Hello, how are you? You ever had that? Where like I'll yell in the house, but when the neighbor comes over, she's like, "I can't believe you! Hi, how are you?" That's called being on. You are on. You want to work in the real world? Here's the deal. You're on. Period. You want to act like crazy in shul? God bless you. You walk out in the world with the yarmulke on your head. Four people are looking at you. You don't even know about. Just how it is. On means. You're on. You're smiling. You're in control of your emotions. You're delivering product that works. You get an assignment, and before you give it in, you go, wait, let me look at it one more time. Because as Naftali said, I live in the standard of excellence. I'm friendly. I'm here to help. I'm off on Fridays and all of September and all of April. I'm working Thanksgiving on purpose. Because I'm on. That's what a good person does. He shows up on the last week of December. He just shows up and says, hey guys, you guys have vacation. I know it's your holiday. Anything I can do? Because that's what a good person would do when he takes the week off. If your mentality is that, I want to add value. You will provide, and I forgot who said this earlier, so much more than most people are providing today. At the end of the day, you can have a family and go home for a long time. Because when you're home, they're going to the game. And you can have faith. Because let me tell you something. I've had enough times going to Mincha where they're like, where are you going? Till they say, fine, just get me a blessing too. Right? Because it's 15 minutes. And if it's 15 minutes, it's 15 minutes, not 4 hours. And for those 15 minutes, they're hocking about, you know, whether the same four people are sitting by the cooler talking about Super Bowl. So you're spending time davening. You don't have to ever apologize for family and faith. Because every day, every minute you're doing that, they're doing something else. They're watching Netflix. They're binging some show. They're not working all day. But if you realize that your value is in, like you said, like I think you said this, Valley, in the information. People at the end of the day run a business. They want to make money. They want to be excellent. And if you're working hard, you will provide greater service for that. And if you're on when you're in the office and you're efficient, Hashem will be with you. You'll add enough value to them where your time in faith and in family will be 100% not only okay, but they'll look at you like, you have to realize that if you're 25, you're 26, you're 30, okay, let's assume you're 30 and you have a wife and a kid. Let's just say. And you go to shul. You know who does that in the workforce today? The partners. Who's getting married at and having kids in the secular world? The people that are at the corner offices, usually, right? The older people. So a person that's able to manage a family and faith and work is the product of, in that world, of maturity. So you come in right away and you're balancing things that only the partners are balancing. Because the people that are your age aren't balancing that. They're not going home to their families. They're wonderful people, God bless them. But they're going home to their apartments. So it's not seen as a negative. And as long as you're providing value and you pick up your head and you're proud of yourself, it's pum fakir. You walk in like a partner. And you already are standing out from the class for who you are.
Question number 11. This will be the last of the submitted questions. If anyone has other questions that are afterward, it's open field for questions.
Hi, Joel. Just picking up on the last question. Do you keep a home profile by your dreams and words?
This is a big issue. We always are a little bit scared that they're looking at us. Yarmulke on, yarmulke off. Why are you going out? I'm going to Minka. They walk in. If you have to daven b'yechidus, and they walk in, and you're totally embarrassed when your secretary walks in and you're praying. And the question is, should we keep a very low profile, or should we be more comfortable with who we are? Rabbi Naftali, if I can turn this question over to you.
It's in my book. The most disheartening thing for me right now is it's impossible to open up a blog, anything, and not read something about something of anti-Semitism that happened today, yesterday. A stewardess, a lady in a grocery store, a convenience store, he didn't want to pump gas, he did want to pump gas. Everybody's all, as we say in yeshiva terms, farnumen with anti-Semitism. And as I write in my book, I worked in corporate America, I worked in corporate finance, I used to fly all over the country to meet with the CEOs and CFOs of publicly traded companies. My YouTube stuff has all kinds of people viewing it. I've personally never encountered anti-Semitism in my entire life. I don't know what all this hubbub is about. Now, is that true? The answer is, I'm sure that somebody was anti-Semitic to me. I'm sure somebody mistreated me. I'm sure somebody looked at me differently. But quite honestly, I never noticed it. I have absolutely no idea. I don't even think about it, okay? So, I wear a yarmulke, period. I don't think about it. I wear a yarmulke because I'm a yeshiva bacher. To Harry's point, to everything we've heard today, Charlie, I am a ben Torah first and foremost, and I'm a Jew first and foremost. And if I have to take off my yarmulke, I'd rather peddle shoes on the street. I don't think about the implications of that. That I was the only managing director at J.P. Morgan that wore a yarmulke was irrelevant to me. That I was the only one that had to unwrap his food like I was on an airline whenever there was a managing director's conference. Honestly, don't care. I'm proud of being a Jew, and I don't think about what other people think or don't think. And most of the time, they're not thinking what we're thinking. We're just projecting on them. Stolz, I'll say it again. Be proud of who you are. Project honesty, integrity, fairness, empathy. Have midos. If you have midos, your yarmulke will not be a detriment. People will look up to you. I have Gentile clients. I could spend the whole night telling you stories. How I won large clients that are Catholic, as Catholic as they come, competing against other Catholic advisors with my yarmulke in a restaurant where I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink, and I don't play golf, and I don't get drunk. Okay? People told me when I went into Wall Street, you'll never make it. Because in your business, you have to do all those things. Otherwise, you don't make it. It's not true. It's not true. You can have a yarmulke, you can have a beard, and you can be kaveitim l'tayra, and you could be the smartest person in the room, and everybody wants to work with you. My advice to you is, don't think about it. Don't acknowledge all the anti-Semitism. Don't think about what other people are thinking. Don't focus on what they're seeing and not seeing. It's irrelevant. You just be a standard of excellence, and none of that matters.
I love that answer, but I want to add a but. You can't take advantage. We have to be very careful of this. I have a friend who's very, very successful, runs a business with Jewish employees, non-Jewish employees, frum employees, non-frum employees. He said every time he interviews a frum person before he hires him or her, he does the following. Takes his yarmulke off. He says, you see this? I'm not Jewish. And they look at him like, what is going on? Like, am I on candid camera? What am I getting punked? What is going on? He says, let me explain the following to you, okay? If you come to work here, I don't care that your aunt's cousin's friend's brother is making a bris in Lakewood and therefore you have to come in at noon that day. That's fine. You can come in at noon, but if you come in at noon, which is 3 hours late, you're going to work 3 hours more. You can't take advantage. You know, picking up on what we talked about. Like Charlie said, showing up on Thanksgiving. Of course you walk out at 2 p.m. Don't be embarrassed about it when you turn into Cinderella because you have to get home and Shabbos is at 4 o'clock and you have to leave time in case of emergency, traffic jam, accident, etc. But if you're going to leave early on Friday, you have to work more hours on Thursday night or an extra hour Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. If you don't, there's a word for it. It's an English word for it. It's a Hebrew word also. It's called theft. If you're supposed to work a 40-hour week and you work a 38-hour week, because what am I supposed to do? I have to leave at 2. Well, then you have to make up those other 2 hours. So we have to be very proud, as Naftali said. But to Charlie's point, everybody's watching us, and you can't use the religion to work less than everybody else. You've got to be the hardest working person in the office, and no one can ever feel that you're taking advantage because of your holidays, your Shabbos, your bris, your wedding, you know, etc.
I have to tell the story. I'm sorry. And Harry, that was great, but Yeshiva University was one of my first clients when I started working. I worked for my father-in-law, and I was in the printing business. There was a man here named Bert Stolve. He ran communications for YU for many, many years. You can check this up. Incredible man. And he was one of my earliest clients. When he passed away, I went to pay a shiva call. I became very, very close friends with him. When I sat with his wife said, my husband often talked about you. I said, wow, that's beautiful. She says, did you ever wonder why he started doing business with you? Because when I came to him the first time, he says, I'm overloaded with printers. I'm not taking any more. And he asked me the following question. Tell me why I should add you to my list. And I didn't remember at the time what I had told him, but his wife said, here's what you said. You said, I'm dedicated, I'm hardworking, I do great work, and I'm fairly priced. If you're the only frum person with a yarmulke who didn't try to put him on a guilt trip and say, because I'm frum, who else should YU give their business to but a guy with a yarmulke, a guy who keeps Shabbos, a guy who pays tuition? You didn't take that cheap route, and that's why he respected you, and that's why you got in. To Harry's point, don't use it to take advantage. Know that you are accountable. And know that there are people that are going to say that's not fair. And that's a chilul Hashem. And that's the last thing you want to do.
Can I tell one story before, since you're telling stories?
Please.
I want to share one story.
Love stories.
I got to share one story. We're almost done anyways. Give me tell you. When I started working in the law firms, I didn't wear a yarmulke in the beginning. I was too intimidated. My first job was Davis Polk & Wardwell, the waspiest firm you can imagine. Everywhere you looked was mahogany, and everyone had like Roman numerals after their names. And here was like this kid who didn't, from Brooklyn, who felt like he didn't belong. So the last thing I was going to do was wear a yarmulke. So my first week, I came in no yarmulke on. And I was so uncomfortable. But, you know, that's how you make it. I'll never forget. I was a summer associate, and I was walking around with a partner. A senior associate. And we walk into this conference room, and it was filled with lawyers. It was a massive deal in the GM building, right near Central Park. Right, the GM building down there, where the Apple store is.
Yeah.
Picture a room, massive, on this big deal, and lawyers like you can't believe. Sitting across the table, it's like a bankruptcy. And I look over, and there's a guy across with a big yarmulke, big black yarmulke on. And I whisper to this guy, I said, let me ask you a question. When you walk in the room, you see a guy with a yarmulke on your head. What do you think? I don't have a yarmulke on my head. My last name's Harari. It's not Goldberg. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could be Italian. He looks at me and says, as soon as I see that on their head, I think, I hope that guy's on my side. He says, something about those Orthodox Jews, man. The laws. They know how to do laws. They know how to navigate rules. The minute I see that, I know. That guy knows what he's doing. And if you want to know the truth, in my heart, I hope he's on my team. And I'm thinking, here you are, going out of your way, thinking that you're going to get further along by not being who you are. And the one guy in the room who's who he is the apple of the eye. Who are you outplaying? Be who you are. And I got to tell you, 2 weeks later, I came out of the closet. You know what I'm saying? 2 weeks later, I woke up in the morning, and I'm like, I got to do it. I just got to do it. And like, usually what you do, for those who do this, when you walk into the turnstiles, it's like we call it the Superman move. When you come into, you go into the turnstile with it, and you come out without it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a certain, like, and you get really quick at it also. And I just kept it on. And I felt like I was me. And to the point that we're being over here, once you are who you are, you'd rather peddle shoes and be who you are than be the fanciest, schmanciest, successful guy and be not who you are.
Charlie, do you have any comments from people when you put the yarmulke on?
Not, I'll tell you, I had one comment. One. Along the way, I think that, to be honest, along the way, I know I've lost opportunities because I have a yarmulke on. I know it. Like, I know that I have. You can't, people are smart enough to not tell you. But the one comment that I had, that doesn't matter. Hashem runs the world. It's Harry's point. Like, you don't lose with the Abishter. He knows how to make things work.
Since we're story time, I have to tell this story. I said it on a podcast. I don't know which. But I get emails all the time from people who say that after they watched it, they put back on their yarmulke. When I entered finance, I started in corporate finance. And the company that I worked for worked with very large public companies. And the person that I worked directly for was Frum. And he did not wear a yarmulke. And in my first interview, he told me, you cannot wear a yarmulke in this job. And I started getting up. And he says, where are you going? I said, I'm not taking the job. He says to me, you'll never be successful with a yarmulke. I said, give me 3 months. If I'm not successful in 3 months, fire me. I was very successful. But it bothered him. It ate him up alive that I was being successful with a yarmulke and he was coming to work without a yarmulke. We went to a meeting together. The company is called Oneida. They used to make silverware. They were a public company located in Oneida, New York. No Jew has ever stepped foot in Oneida, New York, to my knowledge, except for me and him. As we're walking into the meeting with the CFO, her name was Catherine Suttmeyer. I remember everything about it. I could tell you where the room was, how it looked. He grabbed the yarmulke off my head and shoved it into his pocket. And when I tell the story, I still literally want to break out in tears. He didn't give me my yarmulke back. In walks Kathy Suttmeyer. She was wearing a cross. She was a Satmar Catholic. She was wearing a cross that they literally could have hung Jesus on. That's what she was wearing. It started up here and it went all the way down and across her chest. And she sat down across from two Frum Jews, neither wearing a yarmulke. She's openly displaying her faith. And I literally wanted to die. When I got out of the office, he gave me back the yarmulke and I quit.
and I refused to go back on the airplane with him. That's how traumatized I was that somebody grabbed my yarmulke off my head. When we got back, he apologized, and he never mentioned the word yarmulke again. And I noticed that sometimes he would sneak his yarmulke on every so often in the office. So, what should I tell you? It's who I am. It's who you are. You have to make your own decisions.
And the only comment I got when I put my yarmulke on back was a woman came up to me and said, I know you from your other life. And every day at work, I looked at you and said, how did he not wear his yarmulke? You remember something. Just remember this. God's got your back. You got to be you. But remember, if you tether yourself to Yiddishkeit, you will be successful in life. You may not be successful in any particular thing. It don't matter. In the long run, you will be successful in life. Success comes through ruchnius. Once you have that lined up, gashmius is a lot easier. It's the people that don't have ruchnius lined up where gashmius gets to be crazy. Once you have your ruchnius lined up well and you're focused and you're tethered right, let the Kodesh Baruch Hu knows how to split seas and bring money from heaven. Let God be God. You just be as proud as you can be and be the best you can be in ruchnius, and the rest will work itself out.
I think women call it quits there. I don't think we can get on a higher plateau than that. So I definitely want to thank the panelists for coming. A pleasure, a privilege. Really beautiful. You should have a wonderful Shabbos, a Chodesh Tov, and we look forward to doing this again.